If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Wendy Snyder here. It's Sunday morning. Schwani's back. Hi, Dave Schwan.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
We missed you last week.
Well, I was thinking about you, but we were having a wonderful time in Virginia and with my girlfriend Gilda, and had a great visit out there.
And she sent you back with a pattern.
That was so funny because she had heard us talking about the lunch boxes. And I was still thinking about the fact that you had a dream about it and no one called.
Right.
But she came into the room. She said, "Now, I want you to give this to Wendy. This is what my lunchbox looked like."
And it was a red plaid piece of wrapping paper.
Red plaid.
I remember that.
What was it? Red, white, and black? I've got it right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's over. Just red and black on the
And the rust kind of blended in very well when the sides got rusty. A lot of people had that plaid lunchbox.
They sure did.
And somebody else, it is so funny. I forgot that I had the dream that we were going to talk about lunchboxes that we grew up with, and no one participated, and there was dead air, and it went horrifically wrong, and then I was scared to bring it up. And then, gosh, I cannot remember who I was listening to here on this very radio station. Was it John Landecker? It was somebody talking about, oh, well, going back to our lunchboxes, I mean, you probably didn't have a $6 million man lunchbox, but you... And I'm like, that's what started us off, was the $6 million man lunchbox. Everybody had a lunchbox.
Yeah, they did.
A brown paper bag.
Yeah, there was some of that, but I would have to say that in my grade school, there were more lunchboxes than paper bags, and they were all lined up in the back of the room where you had a coat rack. Everybody hung their coat in the back of the room, and below that there was like a little shelf where you could put your lunchbox.
A cubby, kind of. They called it a cubby hole, but it wasn't really.
Yeah.
And I think about that now, and I didn't stay for lunch very frequently, but when I did, just that room temperature bologna sandwich. because you line up all the lunch boxes and, like, of course, no refrigerator to put anything in. Now we would never eat that.
No.
If you left a sandwich on the counter all day, wouldn't you be hesitant to eat it?
Yes. And what about the bananas that were left out? You know, the overripe bananas that were in someone's lunch.
Yeah, and I love bananas, but I like them almost kind of on the green side.
Me too,
When they start turning way too brown, then it's time to make banana bread.
Yes, right. Cut them up and put them in cereal. That works.
Yeah, I still like my bananas firm in my cereal. I don't like them all mushy.
Well, I prefer them, you know, not that way. But, if I've got a banana that needs to go, just will cut it up and put it in the cereal.
Yes, that's a good one. And one of these Sundays, I accidentally made the best banana chocolate chip nut bread I have ever made in my entire life.
That sounds great. Banana chocolate chip?
Yes. And here's the thing. I'm a big fan of banana bread, and I am not a baker. Baking is an exact science. It's like chemistry. You have to follow the recipe precisely or something's going to go wrong.
Yeah.
Cooking, on the other hand, you can improvise. You can do whatever you want. So I love to cook. Not a very good baker, but Jimmy Mack left all these bananas, and they were like so soft, you guys, just so brown. So I'm like, I'm going to try and make banana bread. So I looked up a recipe, and I wanted moist banana nut bread with chocolate chips. And you know what the secret ingredient was? I'm shocked. I can't find this recipe either. Otherwise, I would have shared it today, but I'll look for it.
What was the secret ingredient?
Sour cream.
Sour cream?
I was going to guess mayonnaise. I was like weirdly going to be my guess.
All right. Now I can't remember which one it was, Eli. That's why I wouldn't.
But like, it makes sense with it being like eggs and oil, typical like stuff you'd find in baked goods anyway.
Yes. And I just was astounded because, first of all, I know I love Portillo's chocolate cake, and I know that mayonnaise is the secret ingredient to make that so moist, but I'm pretty sure it was sour cream, and because I remember thinking, yeah, this isn't going to work. It was the best banana nut bread I've ever made in my life. I have to find the recipe. This is the problem that I have. I find a recipe, I follow it, I don't always print it up, and then I can never find it again. So I promise next Sunday I will bring in my banana nut bread for all of us to try.
We're off next Sunday.
Okay, good, because I just realized I said out loud.
I'll be here.
Well, I'm not coming in if we don't have a show, Dave. I'm
sorry. It's the Indy 500.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. Yeah, next week's the 500.
Good, because as I said it out loud, I'm not the person to bring in baked goods.
We'll save it for the next week.
I don't really want to do it again. I just
we've got our hopes up now.
Crap. All right, let me figure it out. We are going to take a quick break, and then we are going to come back. I want to talk sports, if you could do that, Eli Burke, with me. And
you know it.
Tony DeNardis is here producing. Dave Schwann is back in action. It's Wendy Snyder here, and I love looking out onto Columbus and the Chicago River. It's really cool being here early on a Sunday morning and watching the city start to wake up. Dave Schwann's in the newsroom. Eli Burke is in the sports lounge. Tony DeNardis is producing today. Eli, you and I were talking about that. It's just so nice to see the city wake up before the hustle and bustle happens.
It's truly night and day. I mean, no pun intended, I guess. Just coming in, like I walk to the office every time I'm here, and just having nice weather, having people out without just worrying about being bundled
yeah.
up and cold and
summer's coming.
Smiles
baby.
Were on faces. Dogs were being out in the park. It was awesome to see.
Yeah, I love it. And I want to apologize for being a jerk on the air Friday when I was filling in for Lisa Dent. I was very cocky on Friday talking about the White Sox and, you know, they're playing good ball and they're going to kick the Cubs' butts. And that didn't happen for game one. The Cubs took the game 10-5 on Friday night, and that was embarrassing. And then I thought, oh, the Sox are doing pretty well. Last night, it was, at one point, was it 8-0? Because I remember,
yeah.
My husband and I are Sox fans, and I'm like, wouldn't that be something? The Cubs beat us 10-5. What if we come back and beat them 10-0? But that didn't happen. 8-3, still won though.
8-3, so now heading into the series finale today, both teams are sitting on 13 runs scored this series, so really within anyone's reach.
Can you help me pronounce the home run hero's name? Please help me.
Munetaka Murakami.
Munetaka Murakami.
Nailed it.
All right. Because I am a Sox fan, and I'll be perfectly honest with you. I haven't been paying a lot of attention to the White Sox lately because they've not been great.
Well, Tony's probably our resident Sox aficionado.
Yeah, I was going to say, Wendy, you don't have to apologize at all for what you said the other day.
Oh, okay. That's right. You were here.
Yeah, but I mean, it's nice to see them finally come back. You know, after you saw game one, you're like, oh my gosh, this might be a rough three games.
Yeah.
And I mean, they got out quick yesterday and didn't look back, so it was nice to see.
So when's game three?
First pitch is at 1:10 this afternoon.
I'm not going to be cocky. I can't help myself. Although I forgot to put my Sox jersey on. I couldn't decide between the gray away one, the black one, or the pinstripe one. We all share. We have a bunch of jerseys at home. And I saw, Shwana, you missed this, but WGNradio.com, and on Facebook, there's pictures of all the Sox fans and the Cubs fans. And I did wear black today because Sox colors are way cooler. I mean, I wear black a lot, so royal blue, come on.
Can't have anything better
than
that.
Boy, you are a White Sox fan.
Hating on the color blue now.
You guys, and of course this happened. Both my boys played Little League, and I don't know when this happened, but they started using Major League Baseball teams for the T-shirts, not even jerseys. And of course, my second son, Dylan, first team he gets on, the Cubs. I really wanted to quit Little League then. So we played along at whatever, but at the end of the season, it was very fun taking that circular Cubs logo and putting the black Sharpie to it and making a no Cubs. So that was fun.
It's funny. I was the opposite way around. When I was a kid, I played on a team. They were called the Black Sox because I don't know why they wouldn't want to use White Sox. We didn't wear White Sox, I guess. I was on the Black Sox, and then the next year I switched over to a team called the Cubs, but the decal on my batting helmet still had the Sox logo on it. So I had to run an extra lap at practice every time I wore that.
Oh, that is so funny. Well, I have actually made a promise. I am not hating on Cubs fans, and I'm not going to say I hate the Cubs. And I'm trying not to call them the schlubs anymore, but that's really hard for me. You know what? You have to pick a side. You just have to. You don't have to hate on the other team. But people who say, oh, yeah, I just love baseball. I like them both. Deep down inside, you don't like them both. And why don't you just say it loud, say it proud?
I love the rivalry so much. It feels so cool when these games like have extra meaning and there's a little extra trash talk going on both sides. Like especially when it's all in good fun, all because Chicago's going to win this no matter what. You can have that argument too, but there's that true like feeling that this weekend, now that both teams have the winning records for the first time since it was 08, taking that COVID season out of the question there. It's the first time both teams have really had like some stakes to this series, and the city's really gotten behind it.
And look at this. We all come together for the Bears, right?
There you go.
And if you'd like the Packers, go away.
Well, did you hear the chants during last night's game?
Yes.
That was the best part.
When they were, unfortunately, one of the umpires went down after getting hit by a foul tip. But while they were attending to him, there were some chants directed towards the Green Bay faithful.
Well, and isn't that happening? Bears and Green Bay, is that Christmas?
Christmas Day at Soldier Field.
I can't even imagine what that's going to be like. I'm kind of excited. I don't go to games. I have a friend who's a season ticket holder who splits it with her son. She will definitely be there. That's exciting, and I don't like that rivalry as much. But then again, we all come together.
You don't like it as much as the Cubs Sox?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, I just absolutely hate the Packers. I can't hate the Cubs anymore because when the Cubs do well, I can be upset. You know what? The bottom line is I'm jealous. That really is. When the Cubs are doing well, I'm jealous, and I'm sort of happy for my friends who are Cubs fans, which most of them are. I'm so sick of it being the redheaded stepchild of the Chicago metro area. The White Sox have always been the second team, and I have a biological redheaded son. So it upsets me. It really does. 708 says Wendy, black and white are not colors. Yes, they are. What are they? I guess white consists of all colors, black is none, or am I saying that backwards? I don't know. 312-981-7200. And I'm very excited we have a full show today because it was raining in Indianapolis yesterday. Eli, so what happened? The qualifying race was scrapped?
Yeah, so the Indy 500 has two qualifying sessions. We're going to take up the entire weekend. So the first qualifying session was going to happen yesterday afternoon, but it got rained out and got pushed to this morning. They'll start that at 11. We'll have the coverage for the second session, which will start at 3 this afternoon.
All right. Well, that is good to know. Also, and I may want to talk about this again. I talked about this Friday afternoon. There were some high schoolers in California, Inland Empire. I didn't know where that was. I had to look it up. It's like an island. I don't know, but it's in Southern California. Temecula Valley High School, a water polo team. They were cheering on their classmates who were playing baseball, and the water polo team dropped trow and revealed their Speedos and the letters BEARS on their chests. And that's the name of their mascot. So, two school board members took, offense to that and said, you know, oh my gosh, it's now, OnlyFans account. Look at these guys. And then another guy said from the school board said, you know, oh my gosh, they're one step close to the Chippendales. We don't need that in our school district, in our community. And if the water polo players want to support the baseball team, they should do so while looking like professionals. Excuse me, but what do water polo players wear when they are doing their profession? Speedos! So we started talking about this on the air, and I said, sometimes you just have to shut your yap. And so we may start a new segment calling Zip Your Yap, because it just, Mary Vandeveld on Friday afternoons has What's With segment, and she does a little ramp, a rant. But Zip Your Yap, that's kind of how I felt about bragging about the White Sox. Like, maybe I should zip my yap, but I'm not going to. I am just not going to, Marcy. Are you a Sox fan or a Cubs fan?
Okay, I am a Sox fan. I grew up a Cubs fan. We went all the time. Middle school, my friends and I would hop on the L and go to the games. And I swear I was a Cubs fan probably until I was in my 30s. And for some reason, I had visitors in town and business things. And I had to go to like 4 Cubs games in a row. And I just was done. It's weird. And I have been a Sox fan for the past 35 years.
Oh, God, love you, Marcy.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I was at the game Friday night.
Oh.
It was,
not a good one.
Yeah, but, no, it was at some points. But I will say that the fans on both sides, everyone was great. There were no, like, you know, taunting or fighting or anything.
Good.
But you're right. At the end of the game, as everyone was exiting, it was the Green Bay chant.
You know, see, those are the people that need to zip their yaps. Don't you agree? The Green Bay Packer fans?
No, it brought us back together. Oh, yeah, Packer fans, yeah. But saying, you know, Green Bay sucks, I mean, the whole stadium. So it's like, okay, the Cubs won. We'll get them next time, which we did last night. So.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll be watching this afternoon. Go yep. Sox.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you, Marcy. Yeah, I like the whole zip your yap thing, so I have to come up with some kind of segment for that. That'll be fun. Far-flung forecast.
Thank you very much, Wendy. At 9:33, good morning, everybody. Get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices. We head out to Long Island, New York today, to a town called Uniondale. It is designated as a hamlet. That's the way they refer to some towns and villages in the East Coast. Goes back to the early 1800s and has a population of about 32,000 as well. And in Uniondale, there is also an area known as the East Garden neighborhood, and was the site of a runway and a air base called Roosevelt Field, named for Theodore Roosevelt's son, Quentin, who died in aerial combat during World War I. But Roosevelt Field is now a shopping center, one of the largest in New York State. But 99 years ago, it was the site of the start of the flight that Charles Lindbergh took. Ooh. 99 years ago this coming Wednesday, Charles Lindbergh was the first person to fly successfully from New York to Paris. And it began at Roosevelt Field in Uniondale, New York, 99 years ago this coming Wednesday. So Roosevelt Field, part of Uniondale, New York, they have a nice day going there today. Sunny and 82.
That is fascinating to me. And what happened to the Lindbergh baby? Because that's the first thing.
Sure, that's what people think about now.
Yeah. On March 1st, 1932, 20-month-old Charles Lindbergh Jr. was kidnapped from his New Jersey home, triggering a massive manhunt and ultimately the murder conviction of Bruno Hauptmann.
Yeah.
All right. Cause as soon as you said that, I'm like, in my head, this is Wendy's ADHD moment. Okay. In my head, as you were talking, I'm like,
automatically going,
what? Yeah.
To Lindbergh,
what happened
baby?
To the Lindbergh baby?
Yeah.
Cause I didn't know if it was ever found, but it was killed. This poor baby, Charles Lindbergh Jr., killed by a blow to the head shortly after being taken, and his body was found months later.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. And I didn't know Teddy Roosevelt had a son named Quentin.
He called him Quinnikins. That was kind of a nickname. And And Theodore Roosevelt outlived his son by a little bit also, but toward the end of his life, Quentin Roosevelt was in World War I and killed in aerial combat. The early days of aerial combat, think about it. World War I, like 10, 12 years after the Wright brothers successfully took off at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina.
Excellent. I just learned so much from you, Dave Schwann. I appreciate it.
Always here at your service.
Excellent. Let's say hello to Dr. Michael Liu. He is Medical Director for Hospitalist Services at Northwestern Medicine Palos Hospital. Good morning, Dr. Liu.
Good morning, Wendy. Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Absolutely. I'll be honest with you. I thought there was a typo in your title because I had to look up what the word hospitalist is. Is that a new word?
So, first off, we've been around for a while, for 20 plus years. What it means is that I am a specialist that takes care of you while you're admitted in the hospital. And I take care of, you know, your acute hospital needs, as well as helping you coordinate, you know, other aspects of your care, including your transition home from the hospital.
That's an important role, doctor. It really is.
The cherry on top of my training is that I actually started this during the height of the pandemic, actually.
Wow.
So this is my first job right out of school. And, you know, honestly, it's been a wild and exciting time and, you know, really, really, really happy to, you know, keep doing it and, you know, very passionate about taking care of our fellow Chicagoans. So.
Well, I have been in several hospitals. I've had a couple of knee replacements, emergency gallbladder surgery. This is going to sound really terrible. I don't mind being in the hospital. It's kind of an escape from what's going on at home. It's like my spa day, kind of.
So for us, it's important that we, you know, make sure that you feel comfortable and also making sure that your needs and your questions are being addressed and answered. But most importantly, we want to be able to promote a calm, healing environment, because ultimately that's what's going to, you know, make you better.
Yeah, exactly. I get my best sleep when I'm in the hospital. That's so sad to say.
It may be other things that we're doing for you,
too. So. All right. Well, we've got Dr. Michael Liu on the line. And last week, I was talking to Dr. Santina Wheat. And I think I started a bit of a panic because we were talking about the Hantavirus. And I hadn't heard about it until, I guess, many, many, many years ago. You'd hear it every once in a while. But it came to the forefront when Gene Hackman's wife died of the Hantavirus. I believe they were in New Mexico, which is an area where you might run into wildlife, rodent droppings. But then people were texting in saying, so if I clean my garage and I find some rodent droppings, am I going to get Hantavirus? This is not that easy to catch, is it?
Absolutely. You're absolutely in that. Hantavirus is primarily associated with rodents. So far, there's been 40 different kinds of virus that's been identified. And then typically the human transmission is from you coming in contact with virus particles stemming from rodent feces or urine, typically. The key difference here, and from what we're seeing on the news, is the Andes virus variant. That is the only one that's been documented to have the person-to-person transmission. And you are absolutely correct in that. In the United States, it is more prevalent in areas such as Arizona, Colorado, Utah, and New Mexico, especially in the Four Corners region. There are some pretty crucial differences, though. First off, it's not a new viral strand. This virus has been studied for decades, and it's very different from our COVID pandemic in that it's not spread easily via droplet transmission, as we had with COVID, which is person-to-person transmission in that regards. And one of the things that was very difficult with dealing with COVID is that COVID-19 mutates very quickly, and then it has the ability to develop new strains, which makes it more difficult in terms of medications and identifying the new strands. This virus doesn't do that. We've had an analysis from prior outbreaks, and it turns out the virus is not as easy to mutate as the COVID-19. And obviously, there is a lot of concern. And I will say, you know, as far as the cruise ship updates go, right now there's 18 individuals, you know, under quarantine. There's 41 who have contact that they're actively monitoring for symptoms. And as of today, there's been no confirmed positive cases in the United States.
Oh, okay. Because I didn't mean to be an alarmist, but I felt like we both, Dr. Wheat and I, kind of started, all these texts were coming in, like, I go bird watching, I'm outside all the time, I've just cleaned my garage and there was a pile of rodent droppings. But I mean, bottom line is, if you're cleaning up a garage or going through someone's basement and you come across this, put some gloves on. Maybe wear a mask that we have from the pandemic, probably sitting in our closets right now. Wash your hands. I mean, would that all be good advice?
Well, that would be fantastic advice. And also keep in mind, this is very rare. You know,
okay.
There's only been, as we talked about, no confirmed cases in the United States, and there's a couple cases that they're actively monitoring. But definitely agree, you know, washing the hands, covering the mouth, and also, you know, if you do identify those instances where you have the contact with rodents, also helpful to perhaps call in a professional to help you deal with that as well.
And a quick question to or for you. It doesn't necessarily mean a death sentence, does it? Is there some kind of control or cure or treatment for hantavirus?
So the vast majority of the hantavirus in infections, it's like a viral infection. People develop flu-like symptoms, muscle aches, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, things like that. And in most cases, it typically resolves just like a normal viral illness. Where you can have issues is this thing called hantavirus cardiopulmonary syndrome. And that's more associated with things like shortness of breath, fluid in your lungs. So if you identify that early, we can provide advanced care, in this case, like advanced respiratory support for you. And there are certain clinical trials out there as well that's targeted in terms of treating this thing.
All right, because that puts our minds at ease as well. It doesn't mean a death sentence, and chances are, I guess you have a better chance of winning the lottery than getting hantavirus. Is that safe to say?
So similar. I have to look at the actual numbers.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can't say that because you're a professional, but I can just say that.
But certainly, you know, our listeners' concerns are valid.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's any concerns, any questions, obviously, you know, your healthcare professional, as we are, we're happy to address those for you.
Yeah, I love going to my doctor. He's getting sick of me, though, I'll tell you. Dr. Michael Liu, Medical Director for Hospitalists at Northwestern Medicine Palis Hospital. All right, Dr. Liu, it is flea and tick season. I only know this because this is when you have to worry about your dogs getting fleas and ticks. And that, of course, means tick-borne illnesses are out there. What do we need to know?
So, yeah, absolutely. You know, as the weather gets warmer, obviously we have to watch out for these types of illnesses. The main issue with these tick-borne illnesses, it's caused by the juvenile ticks, which are called nymphs, and they're really small. And the peak activity level is typically around May to August. And these are responsible for a variety of illnesses, some of which you may have heard of, which is Lyme disease, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and then rarer, anaplasmosis, ehrlichiosis, and babesiosis. Typically, they have to stay latched on for a while before you can develop these diseases. So the main emphasis here being, you know, you got to dress for protection, which would be light-colored clothing so you can see the ticks. You know, wear pants, wear socks, you know, cover your arms, especially if you're going to be in, like, a wooded area or spend a lot of time outdoors. And this one's important, which is use insect repellent as well. And then after you do your outdoor outing, you come home, conduct checks, you know, check your body, check your clothing, and then also important, check your pets after prolonged exposure. If you are bitten, remove the tick immediately. Clean the area thoroughly, usually by washing it with warm soap and water. And then watch your health. Watch for things like fever, rash, body aches, sometimes up to 30 days of symptoms. And then if you notice anything unusual, or contact your healthcare provider. In most of these cases, a course of antibiotics will cure the illness for you.
I have a question. I have been lucky enough never to have a tick. Let me knock on wood right now. My son Dylan, who is now 23, when he was probably 3 or 4 years old, was giving him a bath and noticed something on his thigh. And I'm like, this is weird. It was tiny, tiny, tiny. And I kind of pulled it and it came right out. My assumption is it was a tick. But nothing has happened since then. Are we out of the woods?
I believe so.
Good.
I would say to monitor your symptoms for up to about 30 days, because during that time, that's when some people can develop reactions or delayed reactions. And then I think you did exactly the right thing. You identified the tick, you pulled it off right away, and you cleaned it really well as well.
Yes. Yeah, it just kind of freaked me out because it was so little. And when I'm hearing you today say that the nymphs are what you're more worried about, that kind of made me panic 20 years after the fact.
But dress for success in this case. And obviously, if you are spending a lot of time in wooded areas, you know, wear the hats, wear the protective coloring, and then the insect repellent, that helps a lot as well.
All right. We have a couple of questions, and let's see what happens here. Mike is on the line. Mike, you had a question about MRIs for Dr. Michael Liu.
Yes, thank you. I am struggling to get through the day because my experience with MRIs, which I have one coming up, has been so terrible that I have actually had to get up. And I just ran out. I could not deal with the noise volume. I'm real sensitive to noises. And the last time I did take Xanax to help me get through, but it's still, I don't know if I didn't take enough. Is there any special equipment, regardless of price, or anything that I can get to put in my ears? I know they provide stuff that was worthless. And can I request for a bladder scan to be put in feet first so that at least my head is sticking out a little bit?
It is very stressful and very loud, Mike. I'm with you. Dr. Liu, any suggestions here?
First off, Mike, apologies. You've had such a horrible experience dealing with MRI. On our end, we definitely understand where you're coming from, and we don't want to order these unless they're absolutely necessary. As far as your concerns go, a lot of the equipment has to be special equipment because it has to be MRI compatible. And most of our imaging centers, they do offer protective equipment such as earplugs or sometimes even ear coverings to help reduce the noise.
It doesn't work for you. Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't work for half the people I know.
And there's other medications that are available as well that we can also give you to, sedate you and make it a less, obviously difficult experience for you overall.
And maybe more so than just the Xanax, correct, doctor?
There's a variety of different medications that we can provide. I mean, everybody's a little bit different and everybody tolerates these drugs a little bit differently as well. I would advise, you discuss it with whoever is ordering these MRIs. If it's a neurological specialist, for example, they can kind of customize a regimen for you.
That's your best bet, Mike. Good luck to you. That really is very stressful. I understand it. It's very, very loud. We have a final quick question. Donna, we have about a minute left. You had a medication question for Dr. Liu?
I sure do. It's a beauty. I'm on Questran for blood pressure, for my cholesterol, but I noticed that from lab tests, that my thyroid medication was not working until I shifted it from two hours before Questran for breakfast to taking it at 10 p.m. Should I shift my other medications to 10 p.m., like my allopurinol or my meloxicam, to make sure that they're working too?
Well, that's a great question.
Yeah.
One of the things that we see with Equestrian is it can bind to certain medications and make it less effective for your body to absorb. As far as your whole regimen, I would definitely ask your primary care doctor or prescribing physician, because there are certain specific requirements with this as well. The timing for, say, your thyroid medication may be different from the timing for your blood pressure medication.
So, Donna, you need to talk to your doctor. And quite honestly, sometimes it's helpful to ask the pharmacist. They know a lot about drugs and drug interactions, right, doctor?
Absolutely. And they can also help come up with a regimen for you as well, giving you exact times on when you should be taking your medications, too.
Awesome. Good luck to you, Donna. As I mentioned, well, I don't know if I told you, but I'm a huge hypochondriac. I wish we could keep you all day, doctor. I've had such a wonderful time talking to you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Wendy. And then for everyone going to the Cubs and White Sox game, you know, stay safe out there and please have a good time.
Yes, drink waters in between your beers. Stay hydrated. It's
absolutely
hot. Yeah. For people who are participating in the half marathon, when does that end? Does anybody know? Will I be able to get out of the city when this show's over at 1 this afternoon?
Well, the closures that we're looking at, say, Grant Park in Monroe between Columbus and DeSaba Lakeshore Drive closed now. And also Lower Randolph from Columbus to DeSaba Lakeshore Drive closed. But things should wrap up around noon.
Okay,
yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah, okay, this is what I was looking for. Columbus in both directions between Jackson and Monroe closed until noon. So around 12 noon, things will start to wrap up.
All right, I have never run a marathon. It's safe to say I never will. How many miles is a half marathon? Does anybody know?
A little over 26. Oh, half marathon?
Yeah, about that's what's 12, going on now,
between
right?
Between 12 and 13.
13.1.
Yeah.
Miles?
Yeah.
Yes.
Good God.
I think it's like 25 kilometers.
That's about right. Yeah.
So are those the stickers I'm seeing on, are those bumper stickers?
Yeah, those are the ones. 13.1, the 26.2, the 0.0.
Oh my God, I just figured that out now. Shwani, did you know that when you saw a bumper sticker? Because I've seen these bumper stickers forever. 13.1 or 26.2.
Oh, those,
I had no idea.
Well, some of them are frequencies of radio stations, I guess. But okay, that makes sense.
All right.
But those numbers are there.
I hate this expression, but I'm going to use it. I was today years old when I found out that's what those mean. Is that how, am I using this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you.
Oh
really?
My God, really?
I had no idea.
Eli, you live and breathe sports, okay? You really do. I had no idea. 312-981-7200. And did I use that stupid expression correctly? I was today years old.
Oh yeah, you nailed it.
All right. I feel a little better that both Tony and Shwani did not know that till today. I'm embarrassed. Jeez. You knew that forever, Eli?
That was something I feel like a middle school teacher once taught me. That, and now, like, whenever I see it, I'm pointing it out. But I feel like someone once told me if you ever see a 0.0, that's actually what they blew on the breathalyzer. But...
Oh, I love that as well. All right. If there are anything, any new developments that you just learned, please feel free to share with us, because I'll bet.
That's a fun segment.
Yeah. You know why? Because, first of all, Shwani, you and I are, you know, the elder statesmen here. So I thought.
On this crew, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, we pay attention to sports a little bit, so it doesn't surprise me that you and I did not know that, but I'm a little surprised Tony didn't know that. Tony, you do sports. You, love sports.
I do. I've never really got into like the marathon stuff. I guess maybe I should.
Well, no, I'm not saying you should.
Yeah.
I say don't run unless someone's chasing you.
Oh, I totally agree.
But I just really had no idea. Yeah. If you'd like to share with us, chances are we're going to all learn together today, and we're here till 1 this afternoon. We have a full show, and Shwani, I actually came across, and feel free to call, 312-981-7200. We can talk about these throughout the show today. You were today years old when you learned something, like the marathon. Oh, my God, I can't believe I never knew that. I wondered what those bumper stickers were, but I never really asked anyone. Eli, quit laughing at me. I see you in the monitor. I should have asked you right away. But another thing I wanted to talk about is, Shwani, I saved this for you. I found this last week, but I just thought this was something that you would enjoy. The funniest street names in every state. Have you gone through some of these?
I've looked at funny names of towns and some street names. Yeah.
Well, this is from Reader's Digest. And these street names actually exist. And there's some stories behind them. I'm trying to find the best ones. In Alaska, one of the funniest street names is Yellow Snow Road. It's referring to the color of snow you definitely should not eat,
according to
Frank Zappa.
Correct.
Yeah. And not someone demanding that you give them all the golden hued crayons in the box. Either way, there's probably a good story behind the name of the street, which is located in Fairbanks, Alaska. It's the second largest city in Alaska. It may seem like the type of street that people would just visit to see the sign, but the real destination is one street away. Destination Avenue runs parallel to Yellow Snow Road. This is interesting. In Arizona, there's a street called Bucket of Blood Street. It's in Holbrook, Arizona. I just thought of you when I was reading some of these.
Holbrook's right on Route 66.
See, you know everything. I just really was thinking of you when I was going through these. Holbrook is home to two natural wonders, the Painted Desert and the Petrified Forest.
Correct. That is correct.
Oh, my gosh. And as Shwani just said, while the most famous street in the city is the Mother Road, Route 66, there's another one with a much darker story. According to local lore, Bucket of Blood Street was named after a description of what a saloon looked like following a gunfight that broke out over a card game. People walking by said, oh, my gosh, it looks like somebody threw a bucket of blood here. Joe Lynn Fox of the Navajo County Historical Society and Museum has confirmed that's why it was called that.
Wow. I've been in a couple of bars out west that looked like they may have had a bucket of blood or two in them over the years.
Right. We have some more of these, and they just cracked me up, and they made me think of Dave Schwann. They made me think of your far-flung forecast, so we will go through some of these. And again, listeners, we're here until 1 this afternoon. If there's something that you just learned, you were today years old when you just learned it, feel free to share. You can text us or call us at 312-981-7200. Tom has called us at 312-981-7200. We were talking some crazy street names. What do you have for us, Tom?
Yes, good morning, Wendy. It's in Dixon, Illinois. It runs about a mile and a half long, and it's called Bloody Gulch, G-U-L-C-H.
Do you know the history of that?
Well, I'd rather not say over the radio, but the name indicates what happened about 200 years ago in that area.
Ah, in Dixon, Illinois.
Yeah, they've built a couple of hotels out here, and they've been lobbying to change the name, and they said it's too historic of a road. So they built a little side street, and that's what these hotels are using the address for. But it's just a rural street. But for some reason, they won't change the name. Bloody Gulch.
Bloody Gulch. All right, Tom.
Can I ask a question from years ago? Did you used to work with Buzz Killman?
I did.
Okay, that's
fabulous.
What I thought. That was what, 20 years ago, maybe?
I can't keep up. I think
you're quite the comedian. I'll tell you that.
Thank you, Tom.
You should do stand up. Really.
Yeah. All right. You'd be the only one in the audience, Tom. But
oh, I don't know. You were their highlight, I think. All right. Well, Wendy, welcome to WGN Sunday mornings.
Thank you. I'll say hi to Buzz for you, okay?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Fabulous. Yes, Buzz Kilman, big fan of his. Here's another road in Arkansas, and Dave Schwann, feel free to tell me if you've been on any of these roads. How many states have you been to, Schwanny?
All 50.
Gosh, that is quite a feat. I've been to maybe 6. You know what? Next commercial break, I am going
to
count.
I have to say, you know, there have been some where I've just kind of touched on them a little bit.
Right.
You know, all 50 states throughout my life, because we traveled so much to see relatives when I was a kid.
That is impressive. So. All 50 states. Wow. All right. Well, in Arkansas, I don't know if you drove down this road. This is Reader's Digest, people, so I believe this to be fact. They wouldn't lie to us. There's a road called Far From Poopin' Road. We can only assume that there are no public restrooms on or near Far From Poopin' Road, which is appropriately enough located just outside the town of Fanny, Arkansas.
I heard it gets backed up all the time.
Woo!
Oh!
Ding, ding, ding. Very good. If you, Eli, I am so proud of you.
I'm proud of myself.
If you travel to the end of Far From Poopin' Road, you'll come out near Constipation Ridge.
No.
It's Reader's Digest.
No.
They're not going to lie to us.
No way.
Which has an elevation of 705 feet. So which one was named first? It's your classic chicken egg scenario and one of Reader's Digest's favorite funny street names. I can't tell you the Colorado road. I don't think I can say it on the air.
Just better to just let it go.
I'm going to have to just look it up. Funny Colorado Road, okay? I really don't think I can say this on the air. All right. Do you want to know Illinois' funny road name?
Sure, yeah, definitely.
Because that's what intrigued me, first of all. And it's not really funny, but it's interesting. It's clever, let's say that. In Illinois, Supreme Court. All right?
Supreme Court.
Yes.
Okay.
It's kind of like living on basketball court in Holly Springs, Mississippi, or squash court in Beaufort, South Carolina, but with a hint of American democracy. And this street name was no accident. It intersects with Liberty Drive. It runs parallel to District Court, Appellate Court, and Circuit Court. Interestingly, Supreme Court is located in East Peoria, Illinois, about 75 miles north of the actual Illinois Supreme Court in the state's capital of Springfield. So is that just Peorians being funny?
Yeah. That's in East Peoria, you say?
Yes.
Yeah.
East Peoria, Illinois, Supreme Court. In Indiana, I've been in that state several times. Of course, we all know about the town of Santa Claus, Indiana. It has a host of Christmas-themed street names, one of them Candy Castle Lane. There's also an Arctic Circle, December 25th Lane, Holly Drive, Rudolph Lane, Silver Bell Terrace, Snowball Lane, and Tinsel Circle. I would love to be on Tinsel Circle. You know how they say if you're looking for your stripper's name, you're supposed to take the name of your first pet and the street you grew up on? Imagine growing up on Tinsel Circle.
Did you know that Jay Cutler from the Bears was from Santa Claus, Indiana?
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's his hometown.
Wow. You know everything, don't
well,
you?
Well, I remembered it. I had to look it up just to make sure. But when you mentioned Santa Claus, I thought there was a Bears player, a fairly recent one, that was from Santa Claus.
Wow, I did not know that. I didn't know anyone from Santa Claus, Indiana. Kansas, there's a street called Gravy Train Lane. You might be hoping to make a quick, easy buck on the street in Topeka. But when you arrive at the corner of Gravy Train and Doggy Drive, you might figure out that it's named in honor of local business Big Heart Pet Brands, which is the maker of Gravy Train dog food. They had the best commercials.
I remember those commercials. They're still around?
I don't know, man. They had this cute little scruffy dog that was chasing a stagecoach.
Yeah, yeah.
And the stagecoach ran into the cupboard or cabinet, whatever you call it, and the dog barked, and it was really cute.
I remember those commercials.
I do, too.
I remember them in black and white.
Oh, I don't think so. Maybe. In Louisiana, there's Bozo Road. Readers of a certain age, again, this is from Reader's Digest, people, may remember a character named Bozo the Clown. Readers of a certain age, you guys all know Bozo the Clown, right?
Absolutely.
Tony, Eli?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you. Bozo the Clown, who appeared on TV networks across the country from 1956 to 1961. I was today years old when, well, it wasn't actually today. But I thought our Bozo here at WGN-TV, Bob Bell, was the only Bozo. I didn't know Bozo was in other cities.
There were other markets that did a Bozo show, yes.
Yeah.
Had to get the rights to do it, just like we did here. But yeah, there was a Bozo in various places.
Yeah.
And then Joey Diario was Bozo after Bob retired.
Yep. Bozo is also a term used to describe a fool or someone who is incompetent, and it predates the clown by a few decades. According to Merriam-Webster, the first recorded instance of the word bozo being used with that meaning was in 1915, and its origin is unknown. It's also unclear when Bozo Road in Louisiana got its name. Liquid Laughter Lane in Maryland, Columbia, Maryland, is known for whimsical street names like Crazy Quilt Court and Painted Yellow Gate, but Liquid Laughter Lane is probably the winner. How did one city end up with so many funny street names? According to the Baltimore Sun, Columbia's developer struck a deal with the post office, agreeing that the city wouldn't repeat names that were already streets in Baltimore City, Baltimore County, or Anne Arundel County. That may not sound like a problem, but city officials had a short period of time to come up with 1,000 names for new streets. For this reason, they turned to trees, flowers, painters, poets, and random concepts like liquid laughter for inspiration. I would like to come up with some street names. I can't.
Any in mind?
Well, no, I'd have to think about it. I can't come up with some on the fly. In Missouri, Kangaroo Court. The term kangaroo court refers to a court that flaunts legal rules and regulations and hands down unfair or unjust rulings. Though the idiom sounds like it originated in Australia, it's an American creation. According to one explanation, the name came from frontier judges who hopped from town to town and weren't concerned about making fair rulings. Kangaroo Court is also a silly road name in Wildwood, Missouri, outside of St. Louis. There are also kangaroo courts in Illinois, North Carolina, and Texas. I need to find out where the kangaroo court is in Illinois. That will be my mission.
Yeah.
I need to know that. All right, we have Schwani's News coming up next. After Dave Schwann's News, we are going to talk to Alex Zalbin, host and producer of the Comic Book Club podcast, and we are going to talk about your favorite TV shows, and feel free to chime in, tell us what you're binging, 312-981-7200, and if you just learned something for the first time, share it. Alex Zalbin, host and producer of the Comic Book Club podcast. And Alex, thank you for joining us on this Sunday morning.
Thanks for having me on, Wendy. Always a pleasure to chat.
Thank you so much. I want to tell you about a show that I just recently started watching because I was listening to the Sunday morning show when Alex Zalbin was on, and a listener suggested the
Margo's Got Money Troubles.
Yes, Margo's Got Money Troubles. I feel I'm really kind of enjoying it. I just started it. I haven't had time to sit there and binge it, or I would have been finished with the show already. It's really, I didn't know how much I loved Elle Fanning and Michelle Pfeiffer. How old is she, I'm wondering? She looks great. Yes, she's had some work done. But she looks good. She's funny. I have always been a fan of Michelle Pfeiffer. So What are your thoughts on Margo's Got Money Troubles?
I really love it as well, and it seems to really be gaining steam with the audience. For people who haven't checked it out, it's on Apple TV right now, and it is about a woman who is a promising writer, an English student. She ends up in an affair with her teacher in college and gets pregnant, decides to keep the baby, and ends up the money troubles of the title. In order to support herself, she opens an OnlyFans, but she does it in a very different and interesting way, building out stories as she goes, because partially because her father, played by Nick Offerman, who is great in everything, is
he's
a wrestler.
So good. Yeah, go ahead. I talked over you. His role in this.
Oh yeah, he's a over the hill wrestler, professional wrestler, and he's just absolutely amazing. The character name is Jinx Millet, so it's pretty wild. But like you're saying, the cast is fantastic. There are, I believe, 7 of the 8 episodes are streaming now. The season finale is on May 20th, maybe series finale because it's based on a book, but we've seen plenty of books get continued past their, no pun intended, shelf life there.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. People seem to really be digging in. Like you said, Elle Fanning is absolutely wonderful in it. She's great in everything, but this is really just a next level comedy drama performance here.
Yeah, I mean, it's really something. I watched the first episode and right away I was like, this is cute. And then it just really goes beyond cute. I truly enjoy it. And honestly, Nick Offerman, anything he's in, I am all over it. And he is just a sweet, compassionate, wonderful, beautiful actor in this goofy little show.
Yeah, and I think it probably helps that it comes from David E. Kelly, who is one of the most reliable showrunners on TV. I mean, to name a couple of his shows, Ally McBeal is, I think, the closest comp, but he also did Big Little Lies, Doogie Howser, Chicago Hope, The Practice, Big Sky. You can go on and on. But he's just somebody that for decades now knows how to structure TV, knows how to tug on your heartstrings, make you laugh, work with a cast, and like you said, you know, from Elle Fanning to Nick Offerman to Michelle Pfeiffer, who is just luminous in the show, is the way that I put it.
Yeah.
It's eminently watchable.
All around, just some great acting. Excuse me. I promise that I will stop talking about this show, because The Boys is just so out there, and the last time I'm talking about it because the series finale is coming up this Wednesday, right?
Yeah, for people who haven't checked it out, this is extremely dark, extremely adult, but also very funny at the same time, superhero series that's been streaming on Prime Video. It is finishing up its 5th season this Wednesday on Prime Video, and it's sure to be apocalyptic as we have evil superheroes led by the sort of evil Superman named Homelander is fighting against the Butcher, Billy Butcher, played by Carl Urban, and the Boys, who are a bunch of humans that are trying to stop them in their takeover of America. But it's big, it's arch, it's funny. And I will mention, if you are spoiler adverse and watching the show, it will premiere Wednesday morning as usual on Prime Video, but they're also putting it in movie theaters Tuesday night at, if I remember correctly, 9 p.m. And it's playing in 4DX, which is the sensory moving, punch you in the back of the in the back seats type thing, which sounds wild to me. For anybody who has watched the show, there's a lot of blood, a lot of gore, a lot of other fluids that get thrown around. So I don't know personally if I would want to watch the finale with whatever they're going to spray me with, but if you want to check it out early, it's going to be Tuesday night in 4DX, and then streaming the series finale on Prime Video the next morning.
The special effects on this show are unbelievable. I needed to look it up because sometimes they look like practical effects, and sometimes there's no way they could be. So they do use a blend of practical prosthetics, like veal brains and fake blood cannons. And then, of course, they use CGI, computer-generated imagery. But it is really the grossest show I've ever seen, but I can't help myself. It's entertaining. It's funny, and it's the acting is tremendous.
Everybody is great on the show, like you're saying, and it's really got its finger on the pulse of where we are in America today,
yes.
Which is the impressive part, given that they wrote it 2 years ago, but it always feels right on the money in a very eerie way. But it does it, it's satire, you know, so it is funny, it's satirical, they're poking fun at media and the nonstop pace of news at the same time as they do have things exploding. And just on the practical effects thing, one thing that I have been really appreciating about this final season is they're doing the most important practical effect, which is spraying star Jack Quaid down with as much blood as possible every single episode. Every episode, there's at least one moment where he's just, his entire face gets covered in blood, and he has just the most disgusted face on. And it's funny every single time.
And honestly, I am not a huge gore lover, but it is just so ridiculous that I find myself laughing when these violent acts happen. Are you doing that too, Alex?
100%. I mean, my son, who is very interested in superhero media right now, but is 11 years old, keeps asking, like, I can't watch The Boys, right? And
no.
That is 100% true. This is not Marvel. This is not DC. It is way beyond that. But yeah, every time that they do something that is just bodies exploding, getting ripped in half, all sorts of the horrible, horrible things that they do, it's so over the top ridiculous. It's almost like Looney Tunes in a way.
Yeah.
It's maybe not that goofy, but it's very funny. It makes you laugh out loud.
It really does. And honestly, the acting is great. And I promise I will stop talking about it, but you should at least just check it out. And I guess what I like so much is the fact that we all just love superheroes, and this shows the opposite side of what you expect a superhero to be. And I think that's what's so entertaining to me.
Absolutely. If you are a big fan of, like I was saying, the Marvel or DC stuff, you go to all the movies, watch the TV shows, you're going to enjoy this as well. If you hate it, you will also love this show, because it skewers it nonstop, every trope, every idea, everything that you believe about superheroes. It just cuts it down a notch and cuts it down to level. And this season, I've been loving it. It's been great. There's been, you know, some fan grousing about certain things, but I've been having a blast, and I really think they're going to bring it home in this final episode.
And if listeners are brave enough to try and catch this on a big screen in 4DX, how do they find out where tickets are available?
I mean, I think you can just get it through Fandango. A lot of these showings sold out pretty much instantly, so I would never recommend necessarily going, you know, on eBay or whatever to get a ticket, but you know, I'm looking at my local showtimes, and they are all sold out at this point, but it looks like they're adding actually extra ones, at least locally. You've got 9:30, but then it looks like they're doing 11:20, 11:30, 11:50. So check your local listings. If you have a 4DX theater in the area, there's a good chance of showing The Boys on Tuesday night.
And maybe wear a rain poncho, just in case.
Maybe plug up your nose a little bit, because they do the smell-o-vision thing, and I don't want to smell that.
I am curious, you put this on our little what to talk about sheet, and I know my husband's going to be very jealous, but you saw the new Star Wars movie?
I did. I saw The Mandalorian and Grogu that is coming out this Friday in movie theaters. If you're expecting it to be streaming on Disney+, that's going to be a couple of months from now. This is a spinoff and continuation of The Mandalorian TV show, which has a helmeted dude who kind of looks like Boba Fett from the movies, and a tiny little green guy that everybody calls Baby Yoda, but his actual name is Grogu, palling along, going on adventures throughout the galaxy. And the new movie continues that. One of the things that's kind of great about it is, if you haven't watched the show, you're not really into Star Wars, you can just go see this movie. It's its own standalone adventure with its own characters in it. Sigourney Weaver sort of plays the boss who sends them off on missions to track down people from the Empire who are stragglers who are left behind. You've got, and this is going to sound crazy when I say it out loud, but Jeremy Allen White from The Bear plays Rhoda the Hutt, who is the son of Jabba the Hutt from Return of the Jedi, except he's very muscly and he fights in gladiator matches. It's pretty wild. I will tell you, I think it's a little bit of a mixed bag of a movie. There's a lot of busy stuff going on all the time. But when it settles down and it just has Grogu, the little baby Yoda, hanging out with other puppets and going on adventures, I was absolutely, utterly delighted. It is ridiculous, just these little things scurrying around. It feels like an 80s movie in a certain way, like a Dark Crystal is probably the best comp. So if you like stuff like that, you can take the kids. You don't need to have watched all nine plus movies. You don't have to have watched the seasons of Mandalorian. You just check it out in theaters. I recommend get popcorn and soda and go see Mandalorian and Grogu.
That is good to know. My husband is going to see it Thursday, and he's already seen like a special preview. And then he will, of course, be talking about it on Rebel Force Radio. And you can find that podcast, too, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. All right. Well, that's good to know. Back to TV, some new shows that are coming our way. What is Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed?
So if you've been enjoying Margo's Got Money Troubles and are looking for the next thing to watch, definitely start Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed. That's going to be premiering with two episodes Wednesday on Apple TV, so streaming right alongside that other show we mentioned. This stars Tatiana Maslany, who people might know from the late great show Orphan Black or potentially from playing She-Hulk on the Marvel Cinematic Universe show. She plays a single divorced mother who thinks that she may have witnessed a murder on a webcam and gets pulled into a massive conspiracy. It also stars Jake Johnson from New Girl, and Murray Bartlett, who was so great on the first season of The White Lotus, plays kind of a merciless killer throughout the show. So it's definitely a twist for him. It's very tense. I would compare it closest to Barry if you watch the show on HBO, because it's got the same mix of like very tense, very dark scenes and surprising humor that pops up at certain points as well. So highly recommended. I've watched most of the season already and really, really enjoyed it, even though it's not necessarily a relaxing evening watch. But that's Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed, and it's going to premiere Wednesday with two episodes on Apple TV.
Okay, I'll watch that. You mentioned Barry. I mean, that is, in my opinion, well, in everybody's opinion, Bill Hader's best work. Would you agree?
So good, so good. And just to give some connective fiber, she plays a smaller role on it, but Jesse Hodges, who plays one of the, I'm forgetting the name of her character, but Sarah Goldberg's agent on Barry, has a main role on the show as the new wife for Jake Johnson's character. So there's a little bit of a connective fiber there.
Okay, and I did watch, you also mentioned Jeremy Allen White, who's in the new Mandalorian and Grogu movie. I watched that special Gary that featured John Bernthal and the other guy's name that I never remember. He has three names. What is it?
Evan Moss Backrack.
Okay. This is a prequel, kind of, to The Bear. It was, I mean, honestly, Alex, if you didn't tell me about it, I don't think I would have known that it dropped. It was spectacular, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's great. It's just, John Bernthal, I think we were talking about this last week, but John Bernthal and Evan Moss Backrack have known each other for years. They performed on stage together for years. They're performing on stage together in Dog Day Afternoon right now in New York on Broadway. And just their rapport is so good in everything they do. This was actually co-written by them and directed by Christopher Storer, who is the creator and director of a lot of the episodes of The Bear. And yeah, it's weird that they just randomly dropped it. It's weird that it's not explicitly connected to The Bear. So like you were saying, if you don't know it's there, you don't know to watch it. But well worth checking out, because not only does it provide a nice little added bit on the fourth season, but it also tees up what seems to be, without spoiling anything, a pretty important event leading up to the fifth and final season of the series. So it's definitely a must watch.
Those two have a magnificent chemistry together.
So good together. I hope they do more. I hope they do Gary 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Excellent. And real quickly here, about a minute, tell us about The Burrows.
Sure. This is premiering Thursday on Netflix. It is from the producers of Stranger Things, and I've been kind of pitching it as Older Things, because it is about a bunch of folks in a retirement community who are threatened by an otherworldly threat, kind of like the Demogorgon on Stranger Things, and have to figure it out. It's very 80s infused, specifically very inspired by E.T. and other things, and the cast is phenomenal. It stars Alfred Molina, Gina Davis, Alfred Woodard, Bill Pullman, Dennis O'Hare, Jenna Malone. I could go on and
on.
The cast is ridiculous. And I had a blast watching this. It's very light. It's very fun. There is some scary horror stuff, but it's much closer to like a Cocoon or, like I said, E.T., that sort of thing. All episodes are premiering Thursday on Netflix. And if you're looking for a poppy, fun sci-fi series with a over-the-top ridiculous cast, The Burrows is the thing to watch.
I will check that out. Alex, thank you so much for hanging with us today. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure here as well. Thank you so much, Wendy.
I had the best time last night. Jimmy Mack and I went to see the award-winning third-generation magician and mind reader, Dennis Watkins. He has joined with the Goodman Theater and Petterino's to create a one-of-a-kind magic theater in the heart of downtown Chicago. Dennis, I am still astounded by your performance last night.
I'm so glad to hear it. Thank you for coming.
Absolutely. All right. I was trying to describe your, they're not tricks. I was trying to describe what I witnessed last night to everyone here in the studio this morning. And, first of all, Jimmy Mack, my husband, was one of your lovely assistants during the show.
He was amazing, I thought.
And what is so cool is this is like an interactive thing, and you wow people with card tricks, with mind tricks, I can't even explain it, Dennis. I am just, wowed by your performance.
I'm so glad to hear it. Thank you. You guys were a terrific audience, first of all. Jim specifically, I thought, was great. And, you know, that's what makes the show what it is. You just hit the nail on the head when you said it's interactive, and it is. Now, people hear that, though, and they worry about it. But I think it's interactive in a way that celebrates our guests, doesn't make anyone look embarrassed
Never.
Or foolish, but makes them feel like magicians, makes them feel magical.
Yes, and young and old. That was what was so appealing to me, is looking out into the audience. I imagine this is great for you, too. There was a young guy who was one of your assistants as well. There were people, I believe, visiting from on the other side of the pond because they had a British accent. Young, old,
that's right,
in between,
right.
Male, female. It was just, I don't know how to describe it. They weren't card tricks. Listen, let me tell you something, Dennis. Growing up, you know, we had Bozo here, Bozo the Clown.
Right, yeah.
And Marshall Brodeen played Wizzo the Clown, and Marshall Brodeen had TV magic cards. And I had those when I was a little girl, and it was fun, and you had to like do a pattern with the cards, and I did it for like a minute, and then I got sick of it. You started.
That happens to a lot of people with magic.
You started doing tricks. What did you say? How old were you?
I was about 7. My granddad had run a magic shop for 30 years, and he was a magician. And I fell in love with it watching him do it. And around the age of 7, I asked him to teach me, and we dove in, and we were joined at the hip from that point onward. And he was my mentor and my teacher.
Incredible. Card tricks, number tricks. I'm still trying to figure out. It really seemed like you were reading people's minds last night. I can't imagine that to be true.
It certainly does, doesn't it? No, it's, I'm the first to say it's not true, that it is all, in fact, what I would say in a quippy way, tricks and lies, right? In a serious way, I would say it's craft, but you know, it is, it's an illusion. And I think a darn good one that we're reading people's minds. But I make no claims that that's actually happening.
It was just, I mean, first of all, I'd like to apologize. You may have thought it to be me heckling you, but there was one point that a number came up and I just couldn't believe it. So I yelled out, "What?" That was me. And I'm really sorry. Sometimes I can't, keep my
don't be sorry.
excitement
it's
bottled.
Perfect. It's perfect.
I tell people I have the best view of the show because I get to look at all of you grown-ups watching magic tricks like your kids and screaming what for no good reason. It's great.
And that's really what it brought me back to. I can't speak for anyone else, but just the wonderment of being a child again and being wowed by these amazing things happening in front of you.
Right, I think that's what it is. As grown-ups, we don't make time to play that way, right? I've got a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old, and I watch them play every day imaginatively in a way that us grown-ups with our real jobs, we just don't get to do. So I'm going to give those guests 90 minutes of play time that they don't usually get. That's the way I like to think about it.
First of all, I just want to say that this is done up so right. We went to Pettorino's, we split a Cobb salad, we had some good shrimp, and then you go next door, 50 West Randolph, you check in, you walk up this beautiful staircase. And actually, you walk down it.
Yeah,
and it's just done up so beautifully. We got a free drink when we came in, and I got the Houdini, which was gin, Campari, strawberry, lemon, Prosecco, activated charcoal, and silver glitter. It was delicious. And then we had a little experience afterwards where you were doing some close-up tricks for us. And someone
That's the encore room.
And someone brought up that you played the part of Harry Houdini in Houdini that was here in Chicago, or was it nationwide?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No. Well, we did a couple runs down at the Arch Center in Miami, but most of the runs were here in Chicago. And it was a play called Death and Harry Houdini, written by my friend and former classmate Nathan Allen and produced by the House Theater of Chicago. And we did a handful of runs, 8 or 9 runs of that show over the course of many years in Chicago. And it was all about Harry Houdini, and it featured magic of all scale, close-up magic. People were floating and disappearing and being cut in half. And the keystone piece of that show was Houdini's upside-down water torture-style escape that we performed every night.
I don't
now,
even...
Now, we can't fit that in our parlor-sized room at the Magic Parlor.
No, but the things you do, I mean, I'm not describing it well. You do card tricks. You do number tricks. There was a guy in the encore room who looked like Adam Driver. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh, I remember this gentleman. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. And you asked him to search something. I'm not going to give things away, and because people, you need to witness this on your own, and we'll tell you how to get tickets. But you asked him to search something, and then you were, like, reading his mind. Well, I know you're not going to give this away.
Oh, I am most certainly not.
I know, but
however,
what the heck?
Right? I mean, it's a beautiful illusion of mind reading. And I mean, that's the glorious thing about this kind of show, especially since you just talked about Death and Harry Houdini, which is that in this kind of magic parlor show, the magic is as close as it could possibly be. You see it as well as you could possibly see it. You're right in it, and 90% of the material in the show puts an audience member at the center of it, where they are actually making magical stuff happen or thinking things that I get to read out of their mind and creating this beautiful magic that's really right in front of your face. You know, close-up magic has a pretty great legacy here in Chicago, and the Magic Parlor is a great little opportunity to sort of push that legacy forward into the, you know, the next stretch of time in Chicago.
It was just, we were driving home and we got stuck in Bruno Mars traffic because he was at Soldier Field. And my husband and I were just saying, the time we had was better than going to the Bruno Mars show. It was amazing.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yes. Dennis Watkins on the line with us. I want to tell you, your talent, the way you work a room is just incredible. But the biggest trick of the night is the way you were able to remember everyone's names. How do you do that?
Well, there are a lot of tricks involved in that, some mental tricks. My granddad was a magician, but he also did a memory act for a long time and had a great trained memory. And he taught me, you know, names are important. And calling people by name, I think, is a way to help them feel comfortable in that room doing the magic that they're doing. And so I think it's important. And there's a book, by the way, that everyone listening can get, which is called Remember Every Name Every Time. It's on Amazon, has tons of great tricks for remembering people's names.
I need to get that. Remember, what is it called?
It's a good one. remember every name every time. The title is perfect. It's just what you want to do.
I can't even remember the name of the book. All right. I want to ask you about Penn and Teller. I'm a huge fan of theirs. They give away some tricks sometimes. What do you think of that?
I love Penn and Teller. I've loved them my whole life. I think they're just remarkable performers. You know, they're coming up on 50, or they're celebrating 50 years of working together as performing partners. And during that time, they've made some remarkable magic and shared it with a huge number of people. I've been a big fan forever. And I got to do their TV show, Penn and Teller Fool Us, and I think it's fourth season, a long, long time ago. Such a joy. And, you know, they do share a little bit of the secrets maybe, but that's meant to entice you and to bring you into the art, not to spoil it for you. They do it well. They're smart.
Do you have a favorite trick that you perform?
I do. And I'll tell you which one it is. You saw it last night, actually. It uses rings from people in the audience. People loan me their wedding rings. And at the risk of giving anything away, I want to tell you that three borrowed wedding rings create, you know, quite a big miracle in the middle of the show.
Another astounding moment last night was the three gentlemen that you took wedding rings from. You would then hold it up in front of their face and say, is this yours? And they're like, kind of looks like ours. How do you not know what your wedding ring looks like?
Well, no. The lights are dark.
I guess.
But we got it. They figured it out eventually.
No, they did.
You know, one of them, I think, even had an inscription that they finally spotted. They just.
I guess it was dark in the room. The whole setup. Listeners, I can't tell you enough what a great date night this would be. It is 21 and over, or is it not? I can't remember now.
No, it's not.
Oh,
we
no.
No people 12 and older.
Yes.
Show that's engineered for grown-ups. There's nothing inappropriate for younger guests. But you know, 12 and up is probably where we find the folks are most engaged in the show.
Just how long have you been performing the Magic Parlor?
You know, I launched the Magic Parlor 17 years ago at a little theater called the Chopin Theater in Wicker Park. It had a short life there. It moved to the Palmer House Hotel, where it ran for 12 years and became the number one show in Chicago on TripAdvisor. We still hold that title. And then it moved over to its new home at the Goodman and Pederino's in 2023.
Well, it is just amazing. And do you do parties?
I do 6 to 8 performances of the Magic Parlor every week.
Okay.
And outside of that, I do one thing. I play with my kids. I've got a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old. And, you know, I play with them every day and spend time with them so they can keep me interested in magic.
Are they interested in magic, Dennis?
You know, the 2-year-old, you know, she still has that lens that the whole world is magic every moment. But my 7-year-old son is really starting to show some interest. And he's got an incredible engineering mind, so I think he might be with us.
Another thing, a lot of numbers were thrown around last night. Were you always good in math?
I wasn't. And if there are kids listening, when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be a magician. Why would I need math? And, you know, at 47, I know the answer to that question. I need it all the time.
I can't even put into words what we witnessed last night, but it was just a truly magical time. And listeners, if you're interested, I really recommend this. And you can go to themagicparlorchicago.com. You can purchase tickets there. And Dennis, it was just an amazing show.
I'm so thrilled you enjoyed it. Come back anytime.
I will. I want to bring our boys, too. They're in their 20s. They would love this.
And, oh, it'd be a joy.
I'm just wondering, a mind reader, can you predict the future, White Sox or Cubs?
Oh, I am not stepping in the middle of that.
You are a very smart man, Dennis. a pleasure meeting you, and I need to go back to this. It was just a magical time. I don't know what else to say other than Dennis Watkins, The Magic Parlor. You can go to themagicparlorchicago.com to get tickets. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. I am not doing a good job selling this because I don't want to give things away, but wonderful magic tricks. See, now I feel guilty saying tricks. And I did have the TV magic cards, and there was a sequence that you would set up and put, like, I don't remember if you would put all, like, every other one, red, black, red, black. So then when the pattern was broken, you would know what to look at. But Dennis wasn't doing any of that. He was just, like, grabbing cards, and people were writing something on cards, and then all of a sudden it would appear. I forgot to tell him too. I also got to put my hand into his pocket, to grab something out of it as part of the tricks. And really and truly, seeing the audience members participating, you know me, I'm pretty outgoing, and, I'm really relieved I didn't get picked, but everyone who got picked played along, and he made you feel so comfortable. Really and truly, as something fun to do, I highly recommend it. And you can go to the magicparlorchicago.com. We've got Dave Schwann's news coming up, and then we are going to talk plants, because I love plants, and I haven't planted my tomato plants yet. You can plant perennials. It's supposed to get cold again, and everything came early this year. Mother's Day was early, and that's where a lot of people decide they want to put things in the ground. I think I would wait a little bit, certainly for tomatoes and herbs and things like that. But we are going to talk to the horticulturist over at Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale, and he can field outdoor plant questions. He can field indoor plant questions. And he also, I don't know how you describe it. He creates bonsais. And they're really cool and really beautiful, and there's a whole different thing going on for that. So any plant question at all, Dan Costa, who is the horticulturist over at Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale. Good morning to you, Dan.
Good morning, Wendy.
We already got a text in here who said there's a woman who came into Vern Goer's greenhouse in Hinsdale and picked up some hibiscus and said you were very nice. And I said, ask him anything, because you really do know the answer to every plant question we have given you.
I'm glad she was happy.
Yes, absolutely. Before we got you on, I was talking about a lot of people plant outdoors on Mother's Day. That's usually the time people put plants into the ground. Our weather has been a little chilly, and Mother's Day was early. I am waiting until the last weekend of May to put my tomatoes in the ground. What about perennials? It's fine to put those in the ground now, right?
Yeah, perennials can go in, and trees and shrubs can go in. That's not a problem. Most of our vegetables are come from tropical plants, and so they don't like the cold. So it should be a nighttime temperature of at least 50 degrees when they go in. And I've always planted my stuff on Memorial Day weekend, and my dad did too, so haven't had too much problems with it.
Yeah, I always wait just to be on the safe side, and the ground is really cold right now, right?
Oh, yeah. It hasn't warmed up very much at all.
All right. I was looking around on your website, and do you have ideas where perennials? I love perennials because, honestly, I don't like to replant things every year. I like to just enjoy the beauty of them coming back year after year. And I feel like
me too.
Yeah. And you get your money's worth, honestly, with those. But is there a way to plan a garden where you have different blooms at different times of the season? And how hard is that?
Not that difficult, really. It's a matter of doing a little research, reading labels, things like that. You know, a lot of people come in here and around Mother's Day, and they buy all the perennials that have flowers on them at that time, and then they complain later on, you know, like in July, that they don't have any flowers. But that's just because you bought everything that was in bloom. So you have to buy some things that are later bloomers and early and mid-season bloomers. You can't get everything that's blooming at once.
And I am a big fan of the cone flowers. I just love them. And years ago, Dan, I only remembered them being the light purple, and now they're a flurry of colors. How does this happen?
Chicago Botanic Garden is responsible for that. They started doing some hybridizing between the purple one and the yellow-flowered one, which comes from farther down south, called Paradoxa. And they crossed the two together and came out with some orange ones and yellow ones. And then other breeders got on the bandwagon and really got the ball rolling. And now you can find just about any color.
Am I imagining things? Because I bought the white swan ones, and they're probably about 6 years old, and I feel like they're turning back to purple. Is that possible?
It can happen if they drop seeds and the seeds sprout. White swan is an old variety, and it's not as sturdy as some of the other newer ones. So sometimes it will die out and then get replaced by its own seedlings. And then you suddenly have purple flowers where you used to have white ones.
And something, and I have like a wildflower garden in the back portion of my yard. And when we first moved in 30 years ago, it was kind of empty. So I'm like, okay, let's plant some ivy. That was the dumbest mistake ever, because the ivy has taken over everything. I've been ripping it out by the roots year after year, and finally it's getting a little less. But I planted, I bought some columbine at Vern Goer's greenhouse, and I planted it in one portion, and I swear to you, I feel like it didn't really take, and then now 3 years later, it came up beautifully, and it's in another part of my wildflower garden.
Yeah, columbine will spread by seeds, and sometimes the place that we put the plant is not the place that it really wants to grow at. But the seedlings will come up in a better spot, and they'll grow there. I got some Japanese fan columbine in the spot is really back by my bonsai trees, and I didn't plant it there. I planted it about 15 feet away.
And so is that just seeds being blown down? Because I think I told you this last time. I have black-eyed Susans now in the front of our house. I didn't plant those, but my two neighbors down the block have them.
Yeah, they spread by seeds. If you don't want that to happen, you got a deadhead, but you know, you can leave the seed pods up, but then you'll get seedlings around various locations.
And deadheading will keep them blooming throughout the summer season. Is that the way to do it?
Well, it doesn't work for a lot of perennials, but it does work great for annuals. Some perennials respond better to it, but deadheading is basically the plant makes the flowers in order to make the seed to continue its variety. And so every time we cut the deadheads off, we're basically frustrating the plant because it said, oh, man, I made flowers, I had some seeds. Now the seed pods are gone, and they got to make all new flowers again.
Mm. All right. 815 wants to know if they can transplant a peony bush or bleeding heart at this time.
Better to do that either in the fall, especially for the peony. They're going to get a lot of exercise digging that thing up, though. It's a big, heavy root. The other one, you'd be better off, too, in the fall, but early spring would have been another time, just as they're starting to come out of the ground.
Okay, so what determines when a good time to transplant things are? I'm assuming if something's getting ready to bloom right now, you wouldn't want to put it through the stress of moving it.
Yeah, and peonies bloom early. They're in bud right now, so they don't really want to be messed with right now. If you dig them up in the fall and move them, then they got some time to root in a little bit, and then in the spring they'll root in even more and start their growth. And they may not bloom fantastic that first year after moving, but they will catch up.
Yeah, plants do catch up. That is the craziest thing. I had so many goldenrod in our backyard, and I gave them to a bunch of neighbors. And like the next year, not great, but then a couple years later, it's all over their yard now. I love these native plants, Dan.
Yeah, they do send seeds around quite well.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. All right, Alice has a question for you. 312-981-7200. You can call or you can text. Dan Costa is on the line with us. Hi, Alice.
Hi.
Did you have a question?
Yes, I did. Hydrangeas. We are right next to the Forest Preserve, and I planted two hydrangeas that I got for Mother's Day. They were absolutely gorgeous. And 2 days ago, the deers had eaten all of them up.
Already?
Yeah, that happens.
Already. And I was so upset.
If you got them for Mother's Day in full bloom, those might be the French hydrangeas, which are florist hydrangeas. And those are really not winter hardy here anyway. They're forced to bloom at that time. And they may not make it through a winter. You'd be better off to get ones at a nursery or here or whatever.
Oh, okay.
That are the hardy
these were
types.
These were from Costco, and they were from Canada, it said.
Yeah, those were, that's the French ones or the florist one. And basically they're grown to be enjoyed while they're in bloom and then discarded after blooming.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. Could you suggest some plants for deers that they don't like?
There's not too many things they don't like.
Or you could suggest something to put down for the deers that they will not.
There are various repellents that you can use, and you can put that stuff down in the around the plant, something like plant skid or Some of the other repellents, plant skid has a longer lasting characteristic than the other ones. So sometimes it's a little bit better, but any of them can wash off with a good rain or a good watering.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think you're just going to have to deal with it. You've got the deer there, and we're gonna take a quick break, and maybe Dan can come up with some plants that deer don't like. But as he mentioned, Alice, they pretty much like everything. So Dan Costa on the line with us. He's the horticulturist at Vern Goer's Greenhouse. Dan, during the commercial break, did you think of any plants that maybe?
I've heard people say they've had too much problems with viburnums or lilacs.
And these are possible choices for plants that deer won't chew on.
Yeah, I don't happen to have deer in my yard, except for once every few years one might show up. But I haven't heard complaints from customers on those.
All right. 708, I've got what looks like wild strawberries in my lawn. Very invasive. How do I get rid of them? I noticed some, too. They're real tiny.
Yeah, well, probably what it is the barren strawberry, which has kind of a yellow flower and a very small, looks like a strawberry, but it's not edible. You can use a selective weed killer if you want. That will, like, weed be gone. That would get rid of them. Other than that, it would be just hand-pulling, digging them up and trying to pull them out.
God, some of those roots just go down so far. All right, Andy's on the line. He wants to know, well, I'll let you ask your question, Andy. Andy, this is Dan Costa.
Hi, guys. I'm getting ready to prepare my soil for my vegetable garden. It kind of needs a refresher. I have organic fertilizer and worm castings. I don't know if I should mix the fertilizer and all that before I put the potted, I got some plants ready to go in the soil, prepare the soil.
I would put the worm castings out, spread them out. You can also use a product called composted cow manure, which is very good. Spread that out and work those into the soil as best as you can, especially like the top 6 inches or so of the soil. And then after you plant, then use your fertilizer.
Oh, after?
After. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
if you
good
use
to know.
It first, it's just going to get incorporated too much, and it might not be as effective.
That is great advice.
Yeah, I'm thinking that the plants might have used up a lot of the nutrients, so I want to replenish it, but I always use the worm castings.
Yeah, well, webcasters are very good. They're just expensive. But it's a very good product.
Yeah, too bad you can't follow a worm around and just grab their poop, because that's basically what that is.
Put a diaper on all the worms.
My daughter does scoop them up off of the sidewalk because she doesn't want to even let a worm die.
Oh, that's a sweet girl. Well, good luck to you, Andy. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Somebody has, I bought a small bowl of assorted cacti. Should I keep the bowl outside or inside? I know they don't need much water, but what about sun?
You can keep them outside if you want for the summer. I would put them in a shady spot for a week or 10 days, and then you can move them into the sun. And during the summertime, they can do a lot of growing and everything. As long as there's drainage in the pot, drainage hole in the bottom, they can take quite a bit of water.
Sometimes when you buy those cacti, those succulent arrangements, there is no drainage in the bottom. So those
right.
You
got to check the bottom.
And if it's, because I'm just wondering if it rains and they get like really soaked, isn't that not good?
No, I actually keep my cactus outside right between my bonsai trees. And they get watered in the summertime. They get watered just about every day. And they haven't complained.
All right. 708 wants to know, will Dan talk about bonsai trees in the house? What is there to talk about?
You can do tropical ones like ficus or Australian brush cherry, sarissa. There are quite a few that you can do in the house. The only ones you can't do is like a juniper or a pine or a maple. Anything that's winter hardy outside in Chicago stays outside. But there are plenty of tropical types. We have several here. If you want to come and take a look, I'll be happy to help you.
I actually sent someone there who was looking for a bonsai tree, and I remember I saw him inside the greenhouse. So,
right. Mm-hmm.
All right, 224, yeah. I have some 55-year-old yew bushes. Do you know what that is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I don't know what that is. I want to cut back by about a foot or more. When should I do that without shocking them too much? First of all, what's a yew bush?
It's that conifer that you see in front of most people's houses, dark green, flat needles.
Like an arborvitae?
No, it's another species of conifer. They're very common.
Okay.
You can cut them back. Been better if you would have done it about 3 weeks ago. But you can still probably cut them back. At this point, I would try to stay within the foliage. So don't cut back to just leaving a bare stem. Because it may or may not resprout. Yews are pretty good at resprouting, but we're getting a little past their big growth for the spring. So you might want to leave some foliage on there. But again, if you want to do them next year, do them early, like the end of March, first week of April, right in that area. Be much better on the plant and get better reaction.
All right. Well, I still have to look through the holes in my yard to determine what perennials I need. 269 has texted in, perennials are the orchestra, annuals are the chorus, both are needed. I love that. So,
pretty true.
Yeah. So I'm going to pop into Vern Goer's greenhouse, 5620 South Oak in Hinsdale. I know you guys are really busy, especially you, Dan. So thanks for taking the time to be on with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, always a pleasure to be on with you, Wendy. Anytime I can do it, I'm happy.
Crosstown Classic coming up at 1 this afternoon. Cubs and Sox, it's tied 1-1. I wonder what will happen. You know, does it matter? I guess not. It doesn't. But it's going to be an exciting game. That's what I'm hoping for, at least.
You know, what's interesting, Wendy, is that these games now kind of, they count because it's interleague play, but we're old enough to remember when there was the Crosstown Classic where they would schedule the game on days when both teams were in town but not playing other teams.
Yeah.
You know? And it was called the Crosstown Classic. It was maybe one game out of the year, but now with interleague play, yes, those games count.
Yeah, see, I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah.
There's a return trip to Wrigley set for August this year as well, so three more games between the Cubs and Sox after today.
Hmm. I forget how this works because it does change frequently.
The MLB had a schedule change a couple of years ago, like on top of what we've been used to, where now everybody plays everybody else in the league, so interleague play is a lot more common than what we've seen. So now the Cubs and Sox will have this kind of like home-and-home series every single year. So the rivalry will be a little more inflated that way, lesser than the division rivalries, because those have a fewer matches
the
now.
The games in August, are they back at Wright Field on the south side?
Those will be at Wrigley.
Yeah. Those will be at Wrigley.
Yeah.
Okay.
That I knew. I knew they flipped. But in the old days, didn't they just rotate baseball parks? When they did it, when it didn't count, it was the Crosstown Classic?
Yeah. They would.
They would draw straws or flip a coin.
They would play on the south side.
Yeah.
Back when Comiskey Park was still there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And something I learned earlier today, there's a half marathon that is probably just wrapping up as we speak, and it's happening downtown on Columbus today. It's 13.1 miles. Is that a half marathon?
It's a half marathon.
Okay.
What was your phrase that you don't like? I was so many years today.
Yeah.
That
now I forgot it already.
I was today years old.
Oh. I was today years old, yes.
Thank you. The youngins have to help us, Dave, because we forget things.
I'll tell you, these young folks, they've got it all down.
You got a good howl whistle there. That was very good. I was today years old when I learned that a half marathon was 13.1 miles. And a full marathon obviously doubled that, 26.2 miles. And I had seen, though, I think they're like oval bumper stickers. And they would either say 13.1, 26.2. And I had absolutely no idea what those meant. But today, Eli enlightened all of us and told us that those are people who have probably run a marathon. Because why else would they have 13.1? A half marathon, or 26.2, a full marathon, on their bumper sticker. So I learned that. 312-981-7200. I said, hey, if you guys learned anything, if you were today years old when you learned something, let us know. We got a couple of texts. 601 says, I was today years old when I found out without her makeup, Wendy looks like James Spader. Yes, a lot of people learned that today. I feel kind of bad for 773. Here's something that I learned recently and feel stupid. I didn't know. You know when you're approaching a railroad crossing and it has the X-I-N-G? I never knew what that meant, and it just meant crossing because the X is like two lines crossing each other. So they just figured that out. A crossing. Everybody knew that, right? Here?
I mean, I always knew what it meant, but I didn't know it had to deal with, like you said, you were making hand gestures crossing with an X.
Oh, so you learned that today too?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it, what it meant with the
The X is like two lines crossing each other. I don't know. I thought that was in the rules of the road book, which I had to learn. And recently, I had to retake my test, and I don't know why I was so nervous to take the written test. It really wasn't that hard.
I say, because you probably have only taken that, what, like a couple times? Because usually they don't make you retake the written test.
Yeah, I think I only took it one time before I was 16 years old. And then, you know, on my 16th birthday, I was begging my mom to take me to get my license. And then one of my sons didn't get their license till they were 20, and I have a 23-year-old who hasn't gotten it yet. It's like, you guys all have your licenses, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? You don't have cars, do you?
I don't. Oh. Tony does.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because you don't live in the city. If you live in the city, it's probably better not to have a car. Where do you park? I'm going to take a break and then I'm going to tell you. There was one morning there were a bunch of closures down here, and I was saying how I don't really walk that much, but Jimmy Mack and I were doing a little leisurely walk to the Magic Parlor last night after I got off the air for Hochberg, and I want to see how many steps I did yesterday. How many do you have so far, Eli? Because I know you work on getting how many a day?
As many as I possibly can. Right now, I'm at 8,000.
God. 8,000 steps already at noon. All right. I'm old.
About 1,000 behind you.
I can't find my steps from yesterday. We need to book a guest to show older people how to use their phone. I know Dave Schwann has a Android phone because he has a green bubble. Don't you have an Android phone, or am I imagining things?
Who, me?
Yes.
Yes, I have an Android.
So I can't figure out how many steps I took yesterday, but...
I used to have an old-fashioned pedometer that you could clip onto your belt. What?
I know.
You can't even find them anymore.
I bet you can.
Well, maybe, but mine wore out.
And you never got another one.
I went online to find another one, and I couldn't find what I wanted. So I guess you have to download the app on your phone. That means you have to carry your phone with you at all times, though.
Yeah, and I do mostly. Although now that I think about it, if I don't have my phone in my pocket when I'm washing the floors or doing housework or gardening.
That's my point. Right.
Oh,
you may have it near you, but you don't have it on you. Which would detect how many steps you're taking.
All right. 630 wears an 8.2 shirt. Does anybody know what that is? Because I just learned something today about that.
I was today years old when I learned about it.
Yes, that an 8.2 miles is what it is to bike around Mackinac Island. Oh, that's cute.
That's a good bike ride. I've done that before.
To go.
That's a long bike ride.
That's a perfect bike ride.
It's such a nice island too.
Oh, it's heaven.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest places I've ever been to.
Oh, very nice.
I'm sure I was there. Where is that?
Mackinac Island?
Yeah. Is that Michigan?
Right at the tip of Lake Michigan, and where Lake Michigan ends and Lake Huron begins.
Great fudge out there.
The best.
Again, I am so suggestible. About noon every Sunday when we're all together, sometime along the line, somebody brings up food, and then now all I can think about is chocolate walnut fudge.
You promised us banana bread earlier, so.
Oh, you know what? I found that recipe, actually. So, all right.
2 weeks from now.
Yes. So next Sunday, Eli, help me with this. We are broadcasting the Indy 500.
Yep.
All right. So we are not here next week.
We will not have a show next week, but we will be here from the 30. We'll be here on the 31st from 9 to 11.
Okay.
There's another race that's going to be cutting us off a little bit.
What's
on
the 31st?
There's a street race, I believe, for IndyCar.
Oh.
And now that's what used to be in Chicago, right? The street race, and that might be coming back to Chicago. Am I hearing this right?
There's talk about that, but right now, this year, NASCAR will be going back out to Joliet, the Chicagoland Speedway.
Yeah.
I'll be going to that race. I'm really excited for that.
That's a great little speedway. It's not little, but I enjoy it very much. I was there one time, and my husband and I got to go, is it Pit Road?
Pit Road.
It is.
Well, cars drive on the road.
Yeah, I guess it would be Pit Road. But I couldn't believe we were there. I can't remember the driver we were interviewing at the time. But, oh, my God, when you're there watching them change tires and doing all this stuff so quickly, I mean, you see it on TV, but to be there live when it's happening, it's pretty darned exciting. I will tell you that. By the way, you can get a pedometer on Amazon. Dave Schwann. 312 said, I just bought a pedometer from Amazon the other day.
Okay. Well, maybe I couldn't find the exact model that I had. It was something different. So
847.
I'll have to go back and check.
They said they bought a clip-on pedometer, too, on Amazon. 630 says, my mother is in an assisted living facility, and they give all their residents pedometers. And then, Dave.
That's a very good idea.
Somebody wants to know if you still have a beeper also.
No. I have a fax machine.
Okay, good to know.
No, I don't. I got rid of that a long time ago.
All right. I was today years old. This, I was like a couple years day old. I don't even know how to say it, but I learned this a couple of years ago. 630. I'm today years old. that learning that you can reverse the white caps on prescription bottles, so they're simply a screw top versus the safety cap. We all know that, right? Oh, come on.
Yeah, I don't know.
First
if
of all,
no,
that. I can't. The prescription bottle, there's a white cap on the top,
right,
and there's a little, like, nib that you have to push down to open it. Or just flip over the top, and it just screws right in, and there's no childproof. All right.
Oh,
see,
okay. I learned that one. That one got me.
Yeah, but you may not even have prescription medicines as often as some people do. You know, I take ADHD meds and an anti-anxiety pill. So, you don't have to have the safety caps, but that was something I learned fairly recently. 219, I got married on Mackinac Island at the beautiful St. Anne's Catholic Church.
Oh, that is gorgeous.
I gotta go up there. That's what I'm gonna work on this summer.
That is gorgeous. How nice. That's just great.
All right, what are some neighboring towns of Mackinac Island?
Well, there's Mackinac City. What you can do is there's hotels of all budgets and price ranges at Mackinac City, which is at the very, very tip of the Michigan mainland there, before you get over to the UP and cross the bridge and all of that. But what you do is you stay there in Mackinac City, and there's a shuttle that runs, oh, I don't know, 14, 16 hours. It starts at 8 in the morning. The last one runs till 10 at night. All it does is go back and forth to and from the island.
Okay.
And you can spend all day on that island. I'm telling you, it's wonderful to be there.
It's like a 20-minute ferry ride. There's no cars on the island. It's just bikes and horses.
Yeah. I'll never forget seeing a UPS delivery guy with a handheld device checking off orders that he had delivered, and he's on the back of a flatbed trailer being pulled by horses.
Wow.
It's that strict. Nothing motorized on there.
All right, that's pretty cool. I got to check that out. I'll go there this summer. I really should. Earlier today, we were talking about the funniest street names, and according to Reader's Digest, they said that there was a kangaroo court in Illinois. But I did some research, and it said there are no public streets named Kangaroo Court in Illinois. So, only Far From Poopin' Road in Arkansas. And
I'm going to let you say that one. I'm not saying
And there's one in Traverse City, Michigan. Speaking of Michigan, Psychopath. Is there really? Because I love that. Canyon County.
I have friends in Traverse City. They never told me that.
Well, ask them, because again, Reader's Digest perhaps has lied to us. Chicken Dinner Road is in Canyon County, Idaho. It's a rural route, earned its name in the 1900s after a local resident won a reputation for serving delicious Sunday dinners. Very funny.
Chicken dinner.
Yeah. You know, every time we used to go out to eat when I was a little kid, we went to Howard Johnson's a lot.
So
when
did we. My grandma loved Howard Johnson's. The clam rolls, those steamed clam rolls. Oh, those were so good.
Clam roll. They weren't made out of clams.
Yeah. It was like a calamari. It looked like calamari on a roll, on a clam roll or something that they called it. It was fried clams.
Oh,
thank you.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought you turned into SpongeBob all of a sudden. Which, by the way, can I just say I'm pretty excited. I'm filling in for Lisa Dent tomorrow, and after the 3:30 news, I'm going to be talking to Tom Kenny, who is the voice of SpongeBob. And to this day,
that'll be fun.
I still love SpongeBob. I watched it with the boys when they were growing up, and they're in their 20s, and I love it. I think it's so funny.
How long has that been around now?
Oh, boy.
I think it started in 99.
Yeah,
did it?
98
that sounds
99.
About right, yeah.
Yeah. SpongeBob, there's been 1999. That's crazy.
That's
right.
About right, yeah.
Yeah, that's the year Michael was born, and we started watching it, and I loved it. Tom Kenny does the voice of SpongeBob, of course, and he also does the voice of Gary, the snail. I could do that. I could do voice work. What am I thinking? I am Wendy Snyder, and thanks to Dave Schwann. He has returned and did a great job today. Eli Burke on sports, Tony DeNardis producing the show, and I need to thank Brett Jackson because he is our engineer extraordinaire, and I broke the microphone earlier. I was touching it too much, and it just completely fell off in my hands. And we had like 32 seconds left to a commercial break, and Brett fixed it. So great job.
Wow.
Love it. Wow. And those are the mellifluous tones of Ron Brown.
Hi, Wendy.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, and my microphone is doing fine. Thank
Excellent.
You.
Don't I touch it too much. I move it around. I think that's what the problem is.
Well, you know, they're supposed to be able to move, I guess. So I wouldn't, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's not your fault.
I'm very gentle. I don't know what happened. I do want to very quickly, before we get into your entertainment news, thank the listener 630 who was talking about reversing the white caps on prescription bottles. They called in, or excuse me, they texted in and said that they learned that very recently. And then so many other people are like, oh my gosh, thanks for the tip about the medication bottle cap. I tried it and it just worked. And then my husband and I are in our 70s from another texter. We learned something new today. Never knew about the prescription bottle cap. And it's a lifesaver for my husband because he's handicapped. And now he can open the childproof caps. So thanks so much. And that's what we're here to do. We're here to learn. I like to learn something new every day or teach someone something. And now it's your turn to teach us something because I don't go to the movies. I don't really. I got to change that, Ron. But
well, the Cannes Film Festival is underway in Cannes, France. Started last Tuesday, and this is the big one. This is the one that sets the stage really for the Oscars, both in American films and international films. And there are some good ones this year. But before they even started the films, John Travolta got an honorary Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival. That's like a Lifetime Achievement Award. So, I mean, everybody's a John Travolta fan, right?
You can't not be.
Yeah.
I mean,
from Saturday Night Fever, the Pulp Fiction.
The Sweat Hogs.
Yeah, that
welcome
going way back.
Cotter.
Yeah, Welcome Back, Cotter. Barbarino. I mean,
Vinny Barbarino.
So he got a well-deserved Lifetime Achievement Award, but it was a total surprise to him. And it was a very nice moment at the Cannes Film Festival as it just opened a week ago, Tuesday, I guess it was Tuesday. So so that was nice to see. But he's also directing his first movie after all this time. It's called Propeller One-Way Night Coach. So watch for that in the future. It's an autobiographical family movie. You know, he's a flyer. I think we know about John Travolta. So this is autobiographical. And it also stars his daughter, Ella Beau Travolta. So that we can be on the lookout for.
Was he wearing a beret the pictures? Because I think there's some.
He was in France.
Yeah.
So when France,
yeah, I guess.
You wear a beret. Yeah.
I guess. He looked kind of goofy. I'll be honest with you.
Well, you got it, you know, but not too many people can pull off the beret and the little pencil thin mustache.
But he is very loved by many people. He is a.
He seems like a good guy.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. All right, what other stories do you have for us?
Well, I know you have to be a John Lennon fan as well as a John Travolta fan. New movie debuting at the Cannes Film Festival. It's a documentary, another documentary about, John Lennon. I was going to say the Beatles, but there's so many documentaries because they're fascinating. They're a fascinating story. This is called John Lennon, The Last Interview. It's a documentary by acclaimed filmmaker Steven Soderbergh.
Oh.
Now, the interview happened on December 8th. 1980. It was just hours before he was murdered.
So
he sat down along with his wife Yoko with a couple of staffers from radio station KFRC in San Francisco. They did a radio interview. It's audio only, but you know, they have a lot of photographs, and they also interview the people who did the interviewing for this documentary. And there's supposed to be some never-seen photographs of John Lennon that Yoko provided for this documentary about the last interview. And the reviews say it's John Lennon at his happiest. How sad. And that's kind of sad because this was the day that he was murdered. But he was giving his final interview to promote the new album, Double Fantasy. And one other thing that a lot of attention is getting, this documentary is getting a lot of attention for, is it uses AI to kind of spice it up a bit.
To spice his voice up a bit?
No, just images.
Oh.
Like surreal images and everything. They don't have like, that I'm aware of, they don't have like John Lennon speaking, you know, as an AI character or anything like that. But they do use AI kind of liberally to spice it up just
a
little bit.
Yeah, all right. So. I'll see. I just heard a song it's mainly Yoko, but it's listed as John Lennon and Yoko Ono, but it's called Sisters. Oh, Sisters. And I heard it, and it was interesting, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, a lot of people are not crazy about Yoko Ono singing, but it was pretty fascinating. Steve Dale has joined us.
There's a new video out. They have a new song, The Rolling Stones. And
yeah.
It's a music video, and they recorded it recently, but what you see is AI images of the way the Rolling Stones looked in 1964-ish, except I suggest they even look better via AI.
Well, that's the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't know that. But yeah, we might as well get used to it. AI is going to be used a little more and a little more. And of course, as people get over freaking out about it.
Yeah, it's here to stay, people.
Yeah, it's going to be. So the movie has not have a wide release date yet, but it's certainly on my calendar of a movie to watch. John Lennon, The Last Interview. And are you a Godfather fan as well, Wendy?
Of course.
Well, there's a new Godfather novel in the works. So could a movie be far behind is my question.
Yeah, but who's going to be in it? They're all so old now.
Well, it's...
or old, dead.
Well, this one centers just on Connie. Remember Connie? She was Talia Shear.
Yeah.
So this will be the first female point of view from the book series. And the first
it's
one written
time.
By
yeah.
a woman. Yeah. So center Connie Corleone, the only daughter of Don Vito Corleone. So we'll have to see. It's just being written. Mm-hmm. So it's been approved by the estate of Mario Puzo, of course, the original writer of The Godfather. But it would not surprise me if there's a movie based on Connie, the book, The Godfather, the new Godfather book, in the offing. So I didn't like Godfather 3. I don't know too many people who did, but maybe
is
Godfather 4.
Is that the one
4.
Sophia did? Yeah,
she didn't do it, but yeah, she starred.
Yeah.
And I used that word loosely. She was she was in it.
Yeah.
And she's not in it. She was a last minute replacement for somebody. I can't remember who it was, but so, you know, give her a little, cut her a little slack, but it was not a fine performance. Not nominated for an Oscar.
Well, I always forget who's related to the Coppolas. Talia Shire, what's her connection?
I'm not sure. I know Nicolas Cage is related to the Coppolas.
I thought Talia Shire was too.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I like her. So,
oh, yeah. She was Rocky's girlfriend, right?
Yeah. So. Adrian! Francis Ford Coppola is her brother.
Oh, okay. There it is.
And her parents were Carmine Coppola and Italia Coppola. That's a beautiful name.
Yeah.
And her kid is Jason Schwartzman.
That's right.
Who is he is such a funny actor. I love him.
Yeah. Yeah, writer and producer, I think, and director as well. So
yeah.
It runs in the family.
Yeah.
And
all right.
Nicolas Cage, I think.
Yeah. Ron mentioned that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think his last name actually is Coppola, but he's decided not to use it because he didn't want to be trading on the family name. So he just doesn't use Coppola.
Yeah, but we
name.
All know it. So honestly, when he was starting
when
out.
When he was just starting out, yeah. I think he used it like in his first appearance, Nicolas Coppola. But after that, he wanted to make it on his own, and he did.
He did. What's that movie he was in where he had the big truth? Well, that Peggy Sue Got Married.
Peggy Sue Got Married.
Every time I think of him now, I think of him with those big teeth.
I think that was a Francis Coppola movie.
Was it?
It was. I believe it was, yeah.
And then he was in a movie called Valley Girl, which had very good 80s music
it
that I
did.
Really enjoyed.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to go to movies, Ron. I don't know what happened.
Well, you got to get back out there. There's some good ones coming up.
In the meantime, Ron Brown will catch us up to all the movie news and entertainment news. And thank you so much, Ron.
You are welcome, Wendy.
Steve Dale's going to hold down the fort You have a big show coming up, huh?
I do. But first of all, I want to talk about the show you saw.
Oh,
yeah. Dennis Watkins, a magician in the Magic Parlor, just adjacent to, I mean, that's quite an entertainment quarter. Pettorino's, the restaurant is right there. The Goodman Theaters, more than one theater the Goodman has, right there.
Yeah.
And then if you go downstairs, it's magic time.
Oh my God. I just really had such a splendid time. And I'd like to go back. I just was sitting there with my mouth open, like, how did he do that?
Yeah, he's amazing.
He is so good. I saw your booth at Pettorino's. And
booth 46.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I honestly, I had to walk around Pettorino's because there are all the caricatures up on the wall. I was good at identifying some, not so good at others, but I did not take a picture of Harrison Ford. And then I went back to take a picture of it, and there was a couple sitting there, and I felt really stupid. And I go, I'm sorry, can I just get a picture of Harrison Ford? And the lady did not look that excited. I said, don't worry, you're not in it.
Wow.
And I didn't get a very good picture, but, yeah, I was, walking around, just that place is so cool.
Hundreds of caricatures that people don't know. National celebrities, movie stars like Harrison Ford, public officials, politicians, and also local people too, including Bob Surratt.
I saw Bob Surratt. Yeah. But there was another guy who looked like Bob Surratt on that wall. I don't know who it was.
I'm on that wall.
I didn't see you.
What?
Aww.
I'm the one with the darts thrown at it.
How do I get on that wall?
You can. Yeah.
All right.
That can happen.
Let's talk about your big show.
The most amazing. So WGN Radio, we've had presidents in here, right? I'm not talking about presidents of companies. We've had that too. But I mean, presidents of the United States have been in this studio or when we were
at the other place. Yeah,
yeah. Tribune Tower. Biggest movie stars that there are have been here. You know, Roy Leonard used to interview everyone, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and at that time, they came into town to do the junkets.
Yeah.
So, you know, Clint Eastwood would walk in or whoever, right? This is the biggest guest we've ever had.
Oh, my gosh.
His name is Jeff Rubin because he is talking about the Candy Hall of Fame. What could be more important than that?
Good for you. You got me.
I'm serious. It's coming to Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, it's big news.
It is big news. For dentists, particularly. The Candy Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
How cool is that? You know, some people say, though, there aren't enough cool places on Michigan Avenue anyway. Well, now there will be. And we'll talk to Jeff about what that is like, when it will open, and if I can get a discount there. What an amazing thing. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I really like that area near the Hancock Building.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yes.
What area is that? Is that the Gold Coast?
Yes,
oh, okay.
It actually would be that.
Because I don't know my neighborhoods or areas. But, yeah, I'm excited about that.
Speaking of neighborhoods, from the 10th Ward, Alderman Peter Chica will be here. So Mayor Johnson said months and months ago, ShotSpotter, we are not refunding that. It was a whole big thing. It was in the news. But here's what he promised, that we'd have it back or, better, he said, a substitute for it. Well, that's not happened. And Alderman Chico is a former Chicago police officer. And I know he has some strong feelings about this, and a lot of people do. So we will talk about that. He's also in the 10th Ward. There are, and it's not talked about often enough, a lot of companies in big industry, tech industry. It's becoming a tech corner of the Midwest, and it will be over the course of the next couple of years. So I want to talk to him about that as well. But what's as exciting as anything else is this guy. I'll be talking to you by phone.
He's the greatest.
Yeah, I'm holding up his book, Whirlwind, Bill Curtis. He changed, with Walter Jacobson, who worked here for some time, the way in which news is delivered across the country. And I cannot wait. Now, when you talk to people like that, that are kind of in this industry, I am intimidated. Are you?
There are. Yeah, I did interview Bill Curtis once, and I was very nervous about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are certain people
that... You
want to
fill in for me?
No.
No.
See, because now I'm getting agita thinking about it because it's just someone that means a lot to you and you don't want to screw it up.
Yeah. And I probably will.
No, so, you do a great job with interviews, and he is so fun and easy to talk to.
You can listen to determine whether I screw it up or not. Have you seen Spam-A-Lot?
Yes.
The show? Yeah, funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you've seen the movie, well, the show is back in Chicago. Leo Roberts is in the show, and he'll talk about, because I happen to know he knew some of the original Monty Python players. It's a Monty Python's Spam-A-Lot, if you don't know. And it's a spoof on the Sir Galahad and the Royal, what, party? I don't know. The Royal Bunch, the Royal Crew. And their search for the thing. So he will talk about what that thing is.
That was a great.
Thank you very much. Also.
Description.
Thank you. Thank you. I think he'll do better than I just did. Angie White will be here. She's an actress who you perhaps have seen on television, in various roles, including Fargo, which she is now in. But she's in a show at the Goodman Theater called Covenant. And this is, have you ever seen, like, do you like scary movies?
Yes.
Have you seen, like, a scary movie, but on stage with live actors?
No.
That's what this is.
Oh, that sounds cool.
But it's also very funny. So, we will hear from Angie White. So, a very busy show leading off with the Candy Hall of Fame. And last week, I had on the show 91-year-old legendary actress Ruta Lee.
I heard.
Did you really? Did you hear what she said at the beginning of our conversation? She said, so we left the newscast with Ron Brown.
She liked him.
She loved Ron Brown. She she called him the sexiest voice she's ever heard. I mean, this is someone who has acted with, you name it. I mentioned Clint Eastwood.
Yep.
She talks about Charles Bronson. I mean, who are the biggest sex symbols ever in Hollywood? She has acted with all of them. Ron Brown?
Biggest sex symbol here at WGN. That's for sure.
Top of her list.